von Meilen und Zeilen. Abenteuer direkt aufs Ohr. Der Podcast des Delius Glasing Verlags mit Tim Kruse.
Heute legen wir los mit einer schlechten Nachricht. Wir machen nämlich Sommerpause. Am 6. September geht's weiter mit Meilen und Zeilen. Bis dahin könnt ihr gerne die alten Folgen hören, die ihr vielleicht verpasst habt. Und außerdem die Europameisterschaft genießen, die Olympischen Spiele genießen, euren Urlaub genießen. Und dann legen wir wieder los. Am 6. September nochmal für euch alle. Nicht verpassen, dann geht's weiter. Es gibt ein paar Begriffe auf der Welt, die fast jedes Kind kennt. Coca-Cola zum Beispiel oder Mickey Mouse oder das Wort okay. Im Sport, zumindest in Europa und für mich, sind dies drei Worte. Tour de France, das härteste Sportevent der Welt. 21 Etappen, 3 Wochen, mehr als 3000 Kilometer durch die härtesten Berge unseres Kontinents. Wer hier gewinnt, macht sich nicht nur in der Radwelt unsterblich. Thomas Olsthorn hat ein gigantisches Buch geschrieben mit dem Titel Episch. Außergewöhnliche Etappensieger der Tour de France. Thomas porträtiert 14 Typen, denen es gar nicht unbedingt um den Gesamtsieg oder das gelbe Trikot ging. Für diese Fahrer war ein einziger Etappensieg der absolute Höhepunkt ihrer Karriere. Thomas ist Niederländer, weshalb wir dieses Gespräch heute auf Englisch führen, obwohl Thomas ein bisschen Deutsch kann. Thomas, herzlich willkommen zu Meilen und Zeilen.
Vielen Dank, Tim.
Thomas, who's your favorite rider ever?
Well, I think when I was a kid and first started watching the Tour de France, I have memories of Miguel Indurain in the yellow jersey. But I think The first time that really captured my passion for cycling and for the Tour de France was in 1997 when Jan Ullrich won the Tour de France.
That
was.
Oh, you say that because we're Germans.
No, it's true because I was I was 10 years old, and I remember watching the Tour, and after stage I would put on a yellow t-shirt and grab my bicycle and just started racing in the street around my hometown. And I think that was the first click I made with cycling. And years after, when the Lance Armstrong domination started, Jan Ullrich was the underdog. And, mostly lots of sports fans liked to also cheer for the underdog. So I think that's why Jan Ullrich was sort of like childhood hero, I think you could say.
Oh, that's nice. We love Jan Ullrich. He is one of those German sports heroes like Boris Becker or Michael Schumacher or Franz Beckenbauer. He's one in his sport. He is unique because he's the only German who ever won the Tour de France, which is crazy, for such a big country. There are more Dutch people who won the Tour de France than Germans.
just one more.
Yeah, well, still, for such a small country, you're only like 20 million, I think.
Yeah.
And I was in Utrecht just a couple of months ago.
Okay.
And what struck me was it was a Sunday and there were so many guys and some women cycling on very professional bicycles through the whole country. And I thought, wow, that's the big difference between the Netherlands and Germany. We don't have this cycling tradition as you have.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we have in Holland, we have a big cycling culture. And it starts just when you are a kid, everybody has a bike.
Yeah.
The infrastructure for cycling is perfect in the Netherlands. I think there are not many countries who have such a good infrastructure to to ride your bike, so it's supported on a young age. And even though cycling is not the biggest participating sport in youth in the Netherlands, you have soccer and field hockey, and those sports are way bigger. But still, you have the possibility to join a cycling club in your maybe not in your hometown, but just there are cycling clubs in the area. So if you really have a passion for cycling at a young age, it's possible to join a club, to do some races, whether it's on the road bike or on the mountain bike. Even if you go to soccer practice or hockey practice, every kid goes on his bike. So it's a big part of our culture.
Yeah, I know. And it's kind of the same here that most people, I live in Kiel, which is a city in the north of Germany by the Baltic Sea.
Okay.
And I would say all of my friends ride their bicycles, but we wouldn't ever go to a bicycle club to do it professionally.
Okay.
I think that's the big difference.
Yeah.
And when you go to France, which is like cycling country number one, they never take their bicycle to go to work or to visit friends. They take the car.
Yeah.
But when you go through France on a weekend, the country is packed with people riding their bicycles in a high-level professional way. So that's the big difference. Holland has both professional riding and private riding. Germany only has private riding, and the French only have the professional ones. It's crazy, isn't it? The different cultures in these neighboring countries.
Yeah, of course. It's a cultural thing. I think it's also just, for us, it's easy, you know, to grab a bike. And in a few minutes, even if you are living in a bigger city in Holland, it doesn't take that long, you know, to get out of the city, just be out and pause on roads. You know, you can, it's not that big of a sacrifice, you could say, you know, just to be out and be away of your work or home, or just be out in the nature.
Yeah. The Tour de France is just about to start. How are you going to work there, and how does your work life look during these 3 weeks?
I work for a magazine called Pro Cycling. Mm-hmm. And because it's a magazine, we also have, we always have early deadlines. Because we are a licensed partner, we are allowed to make the official Tour de France guide for both the Netherlands and Flanders, the Flemish part of Belgium.
Yeah.
So this deadline of ours is always when the Giro d'Italia has just been started. Mm-hmm. So after the first week of the Giro, we already had our deadline for the Tour de France issue.
Oh my God!
Because it's being published in the last weekend of the Giro at the end of May, so then we have like 4 or 5 weeks that the magazine is in store and readers can buy it. So during the Tour de France, I'm actually working on the edition that's about the races that are being held after the Tour. So this year, because of the Olympics, we are focusing on the Tour de France Femme for women, which starts in Holland. So it's a bit different, I think, than most juniors who follow the Tour.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. And do you collaborate with international partners? Because, I mean, you could write for an English magazine too, or have an English editor who writes for you. Or, like, how does that work?
Well, I think up to 2 years ago, there was an English version of Pro Cycling. So we were like a partner. So I think Pro Cycling started more than 15 years ago in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And then my former editor-in-chief brought the Pro Cycling magazine to the Netherlands. So we always had a collaboration between UK and us.
Mm-hmm.
But 2 years ago, the English version collapsed, unfortunately.
Why did it collapse? Like, isn't cycling off interest anymore? Or what's the reason behind it, you know?
I think it had to do with the advertising market.
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We collapsed a bit over the last couple of years. And I think they had some big blows in the UK. And they switched from publishers a few years before. And they decided to put the plug out. I don't know for what reason, but it was really unfortunate. And I'm especially happy that we could continue with our Dutch and edition.
Yeah. You are, I assume, a real expert in the Tour de France, and this is why you wrote the book. How did you come up with the idea of writing this book, Episch, which is epic in English, Außergewöhnliche Etappensieger der Tour de France? How did you get there?
Well, first of all, the year before, I did a book with a former Dutch speed skater, an ice speed skater.
Oh, wow.
And that was being published by Amber Antos. And they, because they knew I was working in pro cycling, in cycling, they wanted to do a book about Tour de France and about winners, you know. And we were like discussing what would be a good hook, a good angle, you know, for a book about stage winners in the Tour. And because it's a Dutch publisher and I'm a Dutch writer, you know, we were thinking just first about Dutch winners, but there were already made quite a few books about, you know, this subject.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know,
let's do a highlight show.
Yeah, we can go back like 40 years in the past, you know, but there were stories, you know, about Dutch writers who've been told before. So my idea was to narrow the history, you know, and not go back like that many decades, just take this last decade. And because of my work for Pro Cycling, you know, I also do some interviews with foreign riders. And the thing that strikes me with also riders from, you know, Germany or France or Spain or Italy, you know, just in Europe, also from further abroad, you know, from Australia or the States, you know, some riders, you know, have and really has to make a long road just to get in the tour, even to come to Europe and to get a pro contract. So my idea was just to grab a few Dutch names, Dutch riders, also a few from Belgium and Germany, but also I actually take the whole world, you know, just take riders from all over, because then you get stories, and it's all also about just not about the victory, but it's actually more about the person behind the victory,
exactly,
or the road they had to follow, you know. And if you make this mixture, my idea was that it would give much more diversity, much more also depth and layers to the book, but I also want to pick a few like hidden gems or forgotten names, but winners who just have a special story. So that's how we came up with the idea to make a mixture.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have a favorite story in your book that you think, wow, this is a really amazing one?
Well, I think there are a few, and it's because of different reasons. You know, I would say the story that was most personal, if you could say, was a story with Fabio Jakobsen, but it also had to do with the fact that I knew him already for 6-7 years. I interviewed him. First time I interviewed him was 2018, just on when he was on the brink of starting his pro career. So I had always had a good connection with him. You know, I did a lot of interviews with him. Also had good contact with him. You know, just catching up with him, how he was doing, just after races, after training camps, just followed his progression along the way. And he was like, before his accident, you know, he was going step by step to becoming the world's best sprinter, one of the best.
Yeah.
And then he had this, everybody knows, he had this terrible accident, you know, just almost lost his life. Then he came back from it and had a very, very, very tough revalidation to get back, even just become first human, then became back a pro cyclist, and even made it to the tour, and which was very typical for Fabio in those years, also before his crash, you know, when he did the first race or first sprint stage, he almost always managed to win. He did also in the tour, so it gave me a chance, you know, to write down this whole story from my first meeting with him up until I think 6 months after his stage win. And we were at his parents' house, watching back the footage of his stage in Jude, you know, just that total story from A to Z, you could say.
Yeah,
I could write it down. So that was quite special. But also a special one to me was there are two more. The one with John Degenkolb was very special, but that was because of also with John. I think we looked back. I had a meeting with him on the afternoon before Omloop het Nieuwsblad in 2023, so last year. And it was like, I think it was 8-9 years after he won his tour stage in Roubaix, which was already a special place for him because of his success in Paris-Roubaix. But also with John, you know, I brought the footage with me of his stage win because, you know, sometimes there are a few riders, you know. I think always it helps just showing the footage, you know, to bring back the memories even more. So it was something when I had the possibility and I could do a one-on-one in person with a rider, you know, I always brought the footage just to show them and go back to that moment. And what struck me most with John was just, even though it was 8-9 years ago, you know, the emotions provoked watching the clip of the footage, you know, the story behind it. He had this personal motivation to win for Jurg, who was like his second father, the best friend of his father, and was the best friend of his father, you know, and he passed away in an accident. And just seeing the emotions, it brought back to John and the way he could reconstruct his victory, you know, and the way up to it just was very, I think it was very beautiful, you know, just the emotion it got to him and just the meaning of succeeding this goal, which was so important for him, that was very special to witness.
Did he cry?
Yeah, he cried. Yeah.
Wow.
He had to cry. Wow. Yeah, And of course, he told me, and I knew this already, but he's an emotional guy.
Yeah.
But just, I think it's also special and beautiful when athletes, sometimes, you know, they hide their emotion, but in his case, he's not afraid to show his emotions, you know, and I think it's It shows like a strong character.
It's so rare, you know, especially for guys. We were all brought up not showing our emotions. And then you have some of these sportsmen who do show them. And I think we all love it because they show what it's possible, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it shows of great character, you know, and I spoke to John a few times before, but I don't know if he didn't really knew me before we had to sit down, you know, just to do it with someone you rarely know. I think that was very special, very, very strong of him. And the third story that was also, I'm noticing now that these are the three stories, you know, who had the
emotional impact, maybe.
Emotional impact was the story of Hugo Hull, Canadian rider. Mm-hmm. And I also say this because it's, you know, Canada is an enormous country, don't have much of the big cycling culture. It's maybe some places it's like a small culture.
Yeah, yeah.
And Hugo was also captivated by cycling on a young age, but more because he did skating before, you know, and skating and cycling, you know, are two sports that combine well together. Mm-hmm. For someone from Canada, you know, it's not that normal that you go to Europe, leave everything behind.
Not at all. But maybe his advantage was that he spoke French. You know, Hugo Hull is from Quebec, and that's already an advantage. So when you go to France and you speak the language already, that helps.
Yeah, it does help, actually. And just that part of the story, I thought was really nice, you know, that he went on this adventure. Mm-hmm. Didn't know if he was going to succeed to make it as a pro cyclist in Europe, but he tried. And he managed to get a pro contract. And of course, you know, the Tour was one of the few races he could watch as a kid.
Yeah.
So he was captivated by the Tour at a young age. And because of the time difference, he was watching during summer holidays at 9 a.m., 10 a.m. with his brother.
Yeah, yeah.
His parents were working. So he was watching at home. So he eventually got to the Tour, managed to win a stage win. And then there was also story of his brother who had died at a young age.
Yeah.
When he was hit by a car, mm-hmm. When he was out doing a run in the winter, in snow, he was hit from behind and he died immediately. So, and that actually happened in the winter, just after Hugo was back from his first year as pro cyclist, or it was the winter before he went to Europe to do his first pro season. Yeah, he was crazy, you know, I think 1 month after the funeral, or a few weeks after the funeral, he was in Europe, far away from home, where his parents were still grieving.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was his
brother. And him too, yeah.
And him too as well. And then he just had to manage to defend his pro contract, you know, and try to make it as a pro cyclist, you know. And he managed to do that.
Yeah.
And he eventually managed to win a stage win and made, the biggest contribution, the biggest... I think what's the best word for it? To honor, you know, his brother, the best possible way to win a stage in the Tour. You know, that was a very special story as well.
Yeah. Your book is super emotional. You know, that's what I liked. It's all these crazy stories behind every rider, you know, and when you're just somebody who's just consuming the Tour de France or the Vuelta or whatever race, you don't see the personal stories behind it. And now this opens a totally new field. And this is what I liked. And I think for you, it's very special too, because you know most of the riders. And when you now watch the Tour de France, even when you watch it from home, it changes everything, right?
Yeah. I think so. I think in my personal opinion, I think it's important for people who love the sport and who follow the sport. And some people, you know, follow cycling during the whole season. Okay, we are watching these cyclists doing their job, but they are humans just like us, you know. I think it's always important to keep that in mind.
Yeah,
you know, that somebody is more than his performance, or whether it's a good or bad performance. Because it's always easy to judge someone by their performance, but there's always a story behind.
Yeah, yeah.
That we don't know of, or sometimes we do because the athlete child decides to share the story. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, there's the story that we do know of. So I think it's always important to keep that in mind. And for me as a right? And as far as you know, I'm always looking for this kind of
stories,
you know, because I'm just intrigued by it. So I like to, these are the stories that I like to tell and to share with an audience.
Mm-hmm. Let's come to your story. How is it as a writer to become international?
Nice, because when I started as, I think when I was in high school, used to go back a few years ago, my only idea of working later was just to become a sports journalist.
Yeah.
I can remember somebody at school told me, well, you know, you have to do this, talking with a mentor about some sort of career planning, just not that serious as I'm maybe putting it now, but to just to prepare yourself for life after high school, I guess. So I thought about it with the mentor and thought, I want to become a sports journalist. And I think I was 15 years old. I can remember the woman was like, okay, well, maybe you should look for some other options because it's not for a lot of people to do this. But for me, it just wasn't, it seemed like there was this only option. So, you know, I started as a sports journalist just here. I lived near The Hague in Delft, which is a city in between Rotterdam and The Hague. I just started doing soccer games, you know, as amateur games. So I just made these steps. I did started to study journalism. I had to do an internship for 3 months. Did it at a national sports magazine. So quite quickly, I got a taste of doing just national sports.
Yeah, which is a drug, right?
Yeah, which is a drug, because once you get a taste, you want more.
Yeah,
you don't want
to
make any steps back. Also, during that internship, I also did some work for Pro Cycling already. So I think I just made steps in the right direction during the last couple of years. And I think that also during that path, you know, you had also the outcome of Jumbo Visma, now Visma Leisure Bike, you know, and riders like Tom Dumoulin and Mathieu van der Poel, of course, you know. So I think I was also on this wave of success for national, for Dutch cycling, you know, and I think I got through on a good wave, I would say, you know, following Dutch cycling, you know, and because of cycling is an international brand, you know, I quick also got a taste of international cycling. And
well, that's great. And then you wrote this book and now it's even translated into German. How is that?
So I did a few books before. I think for me, this is now book 5 or 6. But for me, it's also the first time that the book is translated. So that's pretty cool.
Tell me about how it is.
Yeah, it is very nice, and I must say, because when we were like discussing, we had a subject for the book, you know, different stations of the tour from all over the world because of their stories.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember that I was thinking like, okay, I'm going to do these stories and then maybe the book will be translated in German. It didn't even cross my mind, I think, for a moment.
That's the best.
Yeah, that's the best. And I think somewhere along the process, my editor from Amalantas, the publisher, were like, okay, we're going to this, I think it was in London. It was like this big international book market, you know, where just publishers meet and they have their catalog with them. And all publishers can just look, okay, this is their catalog. Are there any books that are interested for us, you know, I think. And also they started, I think, this collaboration.
Yeah.
With the German publicist, so that's how it all worked out. But I think it's pretty cool. And my mother-in-law, she has her partner is actually German.
Oh, really? All right.
So that's pretty cool, you know. So I got a few examples of the book, so I could hand over one to him, you know.
Oh, that's so nice.
Pretty nice.
Oh my God, Thomas! I think you fulfilled your career dreams, and everything came true. It's like you're participating in the Tour de France your way. So I think you're pretty lucky and happy with that, right?
Yeah, it is. And even at a young age, you know, when I was like this 10-year-old kid, you know, and I had this yellow T-shirt on, and I was like, I was imagining that I was Jan Urs, you know, riding on some Alpe d'Huez or any other big mountain, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe at that age, I had a little dream to become a pro cyclist, but that was just when I was 10. Because I think now participating in tour as a journalist and writing about these riders, I don't think I can get any closer than this, you know.
Exactly.
How you put it, you know, feeling like this, maybe some sort of childhood dream. I think you were right about that, yeah.
Yeah. Thomas, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
For your career, for this awesome book. Good luck for the future. Good luck for the Tour de France. Good luck for Holland during the European Championships in our country.
Thank you. Yeah, you guys as well. You know, I think we both had a great start. So
yeah.
Let's hope we can keep up both and maybe meet each other in the semis or in the finals.
Yeah, let's see. Thank you very much. I'm just going to finish up in German.
Perfect.
Für euch da draußen nochmal episch von Thomas Olsthorn, außergewöhnliche Etappensieger der Tour de France. Es ist ein wahnsinnig gutes Buch. 14 Typen mit ihren persönlichen Geschichten dahinter, unglaublich emotional. Nicht nur für die Radfans unter euch, sondern auch die, die sich für Sportler und Sportlerinnen allgemein interessieren. Thomas, vielen Dank nochmal. Thank you very, very much and good luck for the future.
You're welcome. Best of luck as well.
Und für euch zum Schluss nochmal der Hinweis, wir machen Sommerpause bis zum 6. September. Bis dahin genießt die Zeit und dann hören wir uns bald wieder.
Das war von Meilen und Zeilen. Alle zwei Wochen neu, immer freitags. Wenn es euch gefallen hat, abonniert uns, liked uns, empfehlt uns. Oder schreibt uns an podcast@delius-klasing.de. Nur bei uns gibt's echte Abenteuer direkt ins Ohr.